right now, going back to the hotline. Week three already of the NFL season kicking off tonight. And as we were talking about earlier, it was a pairing of these two teams that started Monday Night Football back in 1970 as well. Although, as we also jokingly said, Broadway Joe Namath will not be starting at quarterback for the New York Jets in Cleveland. But Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com is the site. He's also a contributor to the NFL Spin Zone as well. We always appreciate you, Russell. Welcome back.
Well, let's see if history repeats itself tonight, because in that game in 1970, I believe the Browns won 31-21.
Right.
And Namath threw a pick six.
That's right. Yeah, the Jets had the opportunity, trailing 24-20 and driving, and then bam, there you go. And
I believe the linebacker's name was George Andrews.
Do you remember the original play-by-play voice of Monday Night Football?
That would be Keith Jackson.
You're exactly right. So very good. Yeah, that were there. The Howard Cosell and Dandy Don Meredith, just two-thirds of the group that we, because everybody remembers Frank Gifford, but that didn't happen until 71 because he was under contract, if I remember correctly, what was CBS at the time, correct?
Well, yeah. CBS, I remember Dandy Don doing a stint with NBC.
No. I meant Frank Gifford.
Oh, Frank Gifford, yeah. No, okay. Oh, I was going to say Dandy Don. I know Dandy Don did NBC with Kirk Gowdy. You always hear Dandy Don's famous call. In the Sea of Hands game between the Raiders and Dolphins.
And I remember it's like, oh, Keith, you're going to love this promotion. You're going to be the voice of college football. And, you know, at the time, probably not happy about it, but it certainly played out well for him because the way college football took off, especially in the 70s.
Well, yeah, then you had so many colorful guys in the booth. Alex Karras, Fred Williamson. You know, Monday Night Football, obviously different now and changed a lot when it went to ESPN. But for a long time, for people who don't realize, because we've had NFL primetime for so long, Monday Night Football was the source of halftime highlights. And
that's right.
A lot of people, because football is not viewed or was not viewed the way it is now. Now you can watch it on your phone. Getting games in your area of teams that might not be in your area, as you know, Johnny, was very, very tough. And a lot of people relied on Howard Cosell's halftime highlights for years and years.
Same thing applied. There was a Sunday morning college football highlight show. It was 30 minutes, and they usually would give highlights of four, maybe five games, but that's it. It's not like today where you've got instant access to all of these replays of the games that were happening. And furthermore, your favorite team, if they were really great, like, say, a top five, top 10, top 20 team, you get to see them five times over a two-year period of time. That's it. Only time that you could actually follow your team, if you weren't at the stadium, you had to follow them on the radio.
Absolutely. Yeah, certainly things have changed, you know, this day and age now where you can, like I said, watch a game on your phone, watch a game on your computer. You know, sports bars weren't even really vogue back then as well. So a lot has changed, and, you know, even the blackout rules change now. So.
And people go, what's that? What's a blackout rule? All right, let's look at where we stand through the first 2 weeks, the surprises and the teams that are surprising in a bad way, too. But first, the surprises in a good way. I'm sure when you looked in your crystal ball back in July and August that the 2-0 teams as far as the NFC, I'm sure you had both the Rams and Tampa Bay as the only two teams remaining that are unbeaten on the NFC side as far as without a tie. Because Green Bay and Minnesota, they got that ugly tie. But the Rams and the Buccaneers are those two teams.
Well, I don't think anybody's that stunned by the Rams, who are off to a rousing start. They got out of the gate slow in the first half of the Monday night against the Raiders and have been kind of never headed ever since. And again, it's only two games, but still look very impressive on both sides of the ball. It was funny, when the Jameis Winston suspension was originally announced, I heard many a person automatically giving the Buccaneers an 0-3 start. And all they've done, if you really just think about what they've done, they have knocked off the defending division champions and knocked off the defending Super Bowl champions. And Ryan Fitzpatrick kind of looks like the Ryan Fitzpatrick from 3 years ago when he had that big year with the New York Jets. They didn't make the playoffs, but he set a franchise record for touchdown passes. He had Eric Decker, he had Brandon Marshall. They had a very diverse attack, very explosive. They haven't really rebounded from that since. But defense still a little bit of a question mark with the Buccaneers. But listen, 2-0 and getting ready to face a Pittsburgh Steelers team, which defensively leaves a lot to be desired these days.
Look, I'm a New York Jets fan, and so I can understand Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I've warned listeners all the time, don't be buying the hype of Ryan Fitzpatrick as the starting quarterback to lead Tampa Bay to the promised land. He's good, 2, 3, 4 spot mm-hmm. starts, whatever the case may be. He is not your starting quarterback because he will break your heart. He'll give you just enough hope and then break your heart. And like in that Jet season, the magical season you were talking about, right. He waited until the fourth quarter when he threw, the Jets, a win away from the playoffs, right? Three interceptions in the fourth quarter. That's the Ryan Fitzpatrick that I know, love, and adore.
Yeah. Well, listen, he's a great story. He's been around the league with a lot of different teams. Former seventh-round draft choice out of Harvard. It's amazing that he has actually stuck it out as long as he has, and it seemed like things were kind of over. To allude to what you're talking about, 2015, big year, got bitten twice by revenge-minded Rex Ryan, speaking of New York Jets. The Bills beat the Jets twice that year, really kept them out of the playoffs. A year later, Ryan Fitzpatrick, a bit of a holdout. They can't get the contract done. 3 weeks into the season, he's throwing 6 interceptions in one afternoon against the Kansas City Chiefs. So you're right. He will break your heart. And if Tampa Bay is going to get to the playoffs for the first time since 2007, it's got to be less about Ryan Fitzpatrick and more about that defense, which still has given up a lot of yards, especially through the air. Now, they're a little banged up at cornerback right now, and they get Brent Grimes back eventually. That spells really, really good news. But it's just interesting to see how they have come out of the gate and probably doing it in a way that no one was expecting.
Right now there's 5 winless teams in the AFC. The two that really are probably surprises, Pittsburgh, 0-1-1. They enjoyed that nice tie with Cleveland. It should have been a loss, by the way, to Cleveland in that opening week. And then another surprise team that's 0-2, the Houston Texans, as far as the AFC South. Do you feel like that's both of those ships will get righted soon?
Well, the Houston Texans obviously have an opportunity this week. They're playing a very bad New York Giants offensive line. And if Whitney Merciless and J.J. Watt can't get on track in that game. Now, Houston has found 2 ways to lose. And to me so far, I think there were a lot of expectations, Johnny, about Deshaun Watson coming here and setting the world on fire. Well, let's not forget that he suffered that knee injury in November. And as you well know, watching this game, you might be cleared 100% medically, but I don't know if you're ever cleared 100% mentally in less than a year recovering from a knee surgery. I will be extremely interested to watch Carson Wentz this week against the Indianapolis Colts and how he is moving around and how he feels about moving around. Sometimes that hesitancy. The thing I've noticed so far about Deshaun Watson is his tentativeness. And meanwhile, they've also found some very, very creative ways to lose games, giving up a punt return fake for a touchdown with 2 safeties, safety throw into a safety. And then at the end of the game last week, Deshaun Watson holds the ball a very, very long time. They can't get into field goal range. So if you're Bill O'Brien, I think you're looking back and saying, hey, we lost 2 road games to 2 playoff teams from a year ago. Still, they got to execute a little better. And if they don't, even the New York Giants, whose offensive line looks absolutely horrible, and it did in Dallas on Sunday night, could sneak in and bite them.
By the way, you bring up an excellent point, and I've brought it up on our show, too. We go back to 2016, the latter part of 2016, when both Derek Carr of the Oakland Raiders, along with Marcus Mariota with the Tennessee Titans, both go out with the season-ending injuries in the next to last week of the season. And to me, neither quarterback has been the same as where they were, 2 years ago. And you wonder, from a mental standpoint, if that comes into play as far as, going through the not only the injury part of it, but, going through the recovery, the rehab, everything else, you can't help but think, they're human, that somewhere in the back of their minds, it has to be playing out, you would think.
I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, it's very – it's not a car, okay? It's not a vacuum. you just don't put new parts in there, it works the same way that it used to. And I think that gets overlooked and forgotten a lot of times because people are so anxious, and so is the athlete, anxious to get back on the field and, you know, kind of get out of his or her mind, you know, what happened. But when you have to maneuver around and when you're trying to elude a pass rush and, you know, you're a guy like Mariota or a guy like Watson who relies on his legs a lot and you're not 100% confident about your legs, I think it just takes some time. And, you know, I'll be curious to see how far the Texans go in the next couple of weeks, because right now they look like a team more afraid to lose than trying to win. And right now they are, unfortunately, they've lost 8 games in a row dating back to last year.
Well, you bring up, you know, Deshaun Watson, for example, in that final play against the Titans last Sunday at Nissan Stadium, he crossed the line of scrimmage. But here's the thing. There was nobody in front of him to get inside the 40, which means you would have set yourself up, worst case scenario, for a 54, 55-yard field goal, probably a little bit even closer than that. And yet he didn't take off. And he would have, if he had taken off, he still would have been able to get out of bounds with 3 or 4 seconds remaining. But it makes you wonder if he was doubting because of the injury last year, if there was a little bit of doubt and hesitancy to take off and run, you know, for the out of bounds marker.
I think that's exactly what you see right now with him, is the hesitancy. And everybody, again, you know, he was on the field last year, Johnny, for 26 quarters. And their offensive unit scored 23 touchdowns. He didn't throw 23 touchdown passes. Okay? The other 38 quarters last year, the Texans scored 13 offensive touchdowns. So he is certainly a difference maker. But right now, this is a team that looks like it's out of sync. Their offensive line, which went through a lot of changes in the offseason and needed to, given, you know, I think they tied for the second most sacks allowed last year. But they're not cohesive yet. And there's, you know, and that's not a surprise for teams that made a lot of changes. It's also not a surprise early in the season, as we have learned. You know, the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season is almost like preseason now because of the limited contact during training camp.
Having a chance once again to talk a little football with Russell Baxter. Big game for both Jacksonville and the Titans on Sunday. Jacksonville right now, if you just look at what they've done the first 2 weeks, they seem to be on cruise control, and certainly a huge win against the Patriots last Sunday. So here they are, 2-0 on the season with the Tennessee Titans coming to town. Well, all I got to do is remind what happened last year in week 2 when the Titans went to Jacksonville and they took care of business, blew out the Jaguars. To me, this is a different Jacksonville team, especially with their demeanor as far as on defense. But then again, you know, as far as just on paper and matchups, it looked like Houston should have been able to take care of business against the Titans this past Sunday with everybody injured. I don't really know what to expect. You would just, based on what we've seen out of the Jaguars, you go, oh, this is going to be tough to go in there and get a W. But what we saw last week just shows you that you can never assume anything in the NFL.
Yeah, that was a very undermanned Titans team last week that got the job done. And, you know, they beat Jacksonville twice last year. And there's a lot to be said for that. And that's something that the Jaguars are going to have to contend with and deal with, and also avoid a letdown from getting, you know, revenge per se against the New England Patriots, and doing it in a way that was very, very surprising, Johnny. It wasn't the Jacksonville defense that dominated that game last week. It was the Jacksonville offense, and Blake Bortles throwing for 377 yards and 4 touchdowns. You know, New England was down 21 and 18 at different points in that. If Jacksonville was going to win, I don't think that's the way people expected. You probably expected 3 takeaways and a pick 6, et cetera, et cetera. And instead, it was almost like role reversal. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that Jacksonville last week did not take its foot off the pedal. Now, here comes Tennessee, which is a different story, a different style of team. Will they stay as aggressive as they were against New England last week?
We'll find out on Sunday down in Jacksonville. Hey, by the way, I'd like to get your thoughts. You know, there's been times when the NFL has taken things as far as from the college football landscape, like two-point conversions. They implemented that again in 1994, and we've had it ever since. After the fact that the first 2 weeks we've had ties, and not that Pittsburgh-Cleveland really matters, but I think last week, if you went to see Minnesota take on Green Bay and you walked out of the stadium with a tie, I just think it's maybe time now. I mean, and we've seen adjustments with the overtime rule where previously whoever wins the coin toss, if you go downfield, kick a field goal, you're the winner. And they realize that's kind of unfair just because of the fact the other team, because they didn't win the coin toss, they never touched the ball. I think it's time for the NFL to adopt what the college football ranks are doing as far as overtime. And because I don't really think that anybody wants to see a tie at the end of the day.
Yeah, I understand all that and so on. But, I don't know if also anybody wants to see, seven extra quarters or seven extra possessions of football as well. But you bring up a good point. And by the way, it was because of a Minnesota Vikings game, the playoff game against New Orleans, because, there were people who were concerned that Brett Favre never got the ball in overtime. I don't know how many times they can tweak it. We talk about player safety and how long would a game actually go in the NFL, because we have seen some long overtime games in the college ranks. So I don't think the tie is the worst thing in the world. I mean, if you can't settle it after five quarters, okay, and they did tweak the overtime rule recently, okay? It's not a 15-minute quarter. It's a 10-minute quarter, okay? So, I don't know how much more you can do. Maybe the teams ought to just play better.
But, even in the college ranks, they changed the rule where starting with the third possession, you have to go for two every time. So you may want to do that after the first possession as far as from the NFL side. And as far as player safety, you think about if you can sell an overtime and within the first or second series, it's going to be less plays than playing the full 10 minutes, if you know what I mean.
No, I totally know what you mean. Once they finally figure out what a catch is, maybe they can address the overtime rule.
Well, here's the thing. I would love to see, and this is why I bring it up, because I'd love to see where all of a sudden Minnesota and Green Bay are tied for that final spot to be the number one seed. And so then you have to go to tiebreakers to determine who's going to be the number one seed, who would have potentially the home field advantage and be hosting the other team for the NFC title. And it comes down to a fifth or sixth or whatever tiebreaker. That's what I want to see, and that's how you get changes implemented.
Yeah, and listen, we have seen that. We've seen teams miss the playoffs because of point differentials and scoring differentials and win-loss. What is it? Win, I don't even remember, can't remember the term right now. Again, they have done a lot of toying with it, especially in the last 10 years. And I go back to the days of the early 70s when there was no regular season overtime. Ironically enough, the very first regular season overtime game came in 1974, Johnny, and it ended in a tie.
And there you go. Hey, before we let you go, Russell, remind the listeners again how and what they will expect when they go to profootballguru.com.
Well, get all my pieces from NFL Spin Zone and FanSided, along with some, original material. I've a lot of guest writers who come up and do stuff. We have a new Colts writer named Julie Boyd who does a weekly column on the team. Again, other guest columnists. We invite fans to come and write for profootballguru.com. But the easiest way is to follow me on Backs Football Guru. You'll get everything I write and more. You might even get a grocery list that I pen in my spare time and so on. And right now on NFL Spin Zone, I did a Steelers defense piece, but more importantly, I did a piece on 0-2 teams and the 7-0-2 teams and how you shouldn't give up hope if you're an 0-2 team, because believe it or not, each of the last 5 years, there's been at least 1-0-2 team in the playoffs.
I don't think it's going to be the Buffalo Bills, though.
I don't know. Well, I mean, it's funny. You have to go all the way back to the Saints last year, who were 0-2 and won the division. And in 2016 was the Dolphins. In 2015, it was Houston and Seattle. And in 2014, the Colts. In 2013, the Panthers. A lot of these teams not only made the playoffs, Johnny, they wind up winning their divisions.
Well, and I'm not going to count out the Oakland Raiders just yet either. I know they're 0-2, but they look really two or three plays against the Rams in the opening week, and then you look at what happened at Denver, where if they're successful on that when they went for the first down and didn't get it, if they had made it, then Denver would have lost by double digits at home to Oakland. So I'm not going to – I think Oakland could be one of those teams that still can make some noise as far as the AFC West.
A lot of time left, and conversely – one of these teams that have already gotten off to a fast start, that you know, they'll come crashing back to earth as well.
Russell, you have a great weekend. We'll talk to you down the road, and thank you again.
You got it.